Donal in a Kitchen talks about food. Donal in a Kitchen talks recipes. Donal in a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Donal in a Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We are the Donal in a Kitchen. We come to you live here at noon on KHOI Community Radio, right in the center of everything, center of Iowa. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yeah. The Donal in a Kitchen show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Dug Pub, where pub means community. For more information, go to themuckyduckpub.com or call the pub and ask for Marcus.
Thank you for joining us today. We are still in the COVID pandemic mode here. We are doing things a little differently, but we hope you join us, kick back, pour yourself a cup of coffee, and join us around our kitchen table. We are coming to you from our home kitchen, and we have Mike in the studio who is bringing you our audio, and things are good. So, happy Cinco de Mayo, everybody. That does come around once a year, 5th of May. On the farm, we had a beautiful weekend. I got out and planted a lot of things. Of course, now it's cold and rainy and all my little plants are shivering, but that's okay. That's okay.
It will end.
It will come, and I think spring is almost really truly here.
Hey, I have lilacs.
Oh, yeah. Aren't the early smells, the lilacs, and for me, there's a plum tree, a wild plum tree, right kind of outside my back door, and you get hit in the face with that smell. That is a good smell for spring. And I've had a very insistent bumblebee that I must have taken out of the house about 3 times already. This big old slow-moving thing.
Same bumblebee.
I am
just
sure.
Just give him a name.
I'm just sure.
Well, Herbert.
He doesn't belong bumbling against my window. So I use the little cup, and I use a little piece of paper and get him out of there, let him go. Next day, he was back. And then the next day after that, he got in my greenhouse. And it wouldn't be so bad, but he seems so upset being stuck in the inside.
He's bumbling.
Oh. So 3 cheers for all the bees and things that are waking up. And I must report that the COVID social distancing isolation thing finally got to me, folks. But I just kind of went crazy, and in a fit of pique this last weekend, I cut my own hair. I couldn't wait anymore, but it's okay. I just can't.
It looks good, Lana. You did really, really good job, okay?
I just have kind of a short haircut anyway, so I just kind of took the same amount off all over. And
well, maybe you never have to go back. And
maybe I
could do this for forever now.
I have a new skill, and besides, this is radio. So all across the country, there's talk about opening up the economy. Oh, the economy. There are sick people out there, and we still don't know much about how this virus is moving around. But open the economy. I noticed there were a few restaurants in Ames that were open this last week. There were some patio seating kind of places that were open. And, of course, this time of year, guys on motorcycles are out going between the... And look, that was open. That's last week, we reported that the local downtown farmers market would be open, but not...
We were wrong. Okay.
Okay, tell us, Donna.
Well, it's been postponed for at least another week, so it is not opening on the 9th. Perhaps on the, what's the next, maybe the 16th, if that's a Saturday. I haven't looked at the calendar, but, you know, we're still hoping that we will get a farmer's market in some modified form so we can have all these nice fresh things and support our local food producing community. But sorry, folks, it's not going to be this Saturday, so don't go.
Oh, okay. Well, I think they're still working on doing a virtual purchasing sort of thing online. So contacting the Ames Chamber of Commerce and the Ames Main Street Farmers Market people for that.
I think because we'd want to get an email notice or find out
Yeah.
We'll keep you guys updated. Look out next week. Maybe we'll have more definitive information.
We have to learn new things, okay? We are adjusting. Masks are important. I know people may think they look a little funny with a mask on, but I feel a lot better wearing a mask and seeing other, you know, especially check out people. And
I think it's a polite thing to do.
It's a polite thing.
You know, it may not be for you, but it could be. It's a signal to other people that you're concerned about their welfare as well.
And think about those viruses you just may be moving on to your grandma or something. Be careful, because it's not just you and the virus.
Well, you know,
everybody.
It was in the New York Times this morning.
Or what?
They say, oh, children are not affected now. It's rare, but some children are coming down. They hadn't had the flu symptoms, but now they're coming down with some kind of inflammation of the veins or arteries or something very serious. So it's not true that children can't get it. Fortunately, not as much as older people, but this is a very weird virus that we don't understand yet.
So let us be cautious, okay? We've got a lot to learn yet. COVID-19 is causing some trouble for the economy. Here in Iowa, the big flare-up, the packing houses. Yes, we have a lot of pork and beef slaughtering here and chickens. Donna, what have you found out?
Well, here's the thing. You know, of course, I've been watching the Iowa numbers anxiously, as is, I'm sure, have everyone else. And we were not doing too badly until, boom, it got into the packing houses, which are our seem to be the Achilles heel for Iowans. Our numbers were looking great, you know, while we were busy watching New York go through horrific things. We were still pretty safe. And, you know, all of us were self-quarantining. But, you know, it was really not a nail-biter. But now that's not true anymore. Our numbers are going up dramatically from all the packing houses. So Iowa, as many as 18.2% of workers in some Iowa plants, that's really high, folks, 18.2% for Iowa are infected. And actually, Iowa has a slightly higher infection rate than many of the other places. I don't know why, but we do. So, you know, we also have to remember that there's been a lot of press about, because last week President Trump signed an executive order to keep the meat plants in operation, which means that people are required to go to work.
This is really something. We have to decide what is essential here. There are human beings. There are workers on the front line. I don't know about this.
Well, the question with the meat packing plants is, have the workers been given as much as possible adequate protections? Okay, so the answer seems to be, according to workers and journalists, no. You know, and of course, they could do things like slow the line speed.
We could kind of try. Well, one of the things that we just talked about, and this is important, the COVID rate in Iowa is going up because we've had large outbreaks at the food processing plants. And we've had fairly high rates, maybe the highest of any state, up to 18.2% rates of infection at Iowa plants. So this means while the rates in New York are mercifully going down, Iowa's are raising, and there are a lot of issues. There's been an executive order that to keep the meat plants in operation. So these meat processor workers are being required to go back to work. And the big question is, have they been given the adequate protections to, are they getting hand sanitizers, masks, protective barriers? Are they slowing the lines down? And the reporting that I'm reading is it's not been very worker friendly. In some places, the workers are protesting. Because they're not adequately protected. They don't feel safe. and yet they're ordered by the federal government to go back to work. So we got a little dilemma here, and it is, some of it is playing out in Iowa. So
right, and there is pushback. I the idea of requiring somebody to go into an unsafe
work situation is not good. There's an organization called the League of United Latin American Citizens, and they are organizing in meat plants all around the country. But there's a lot of them here in Iowa, so they're very, very interested in what's happening here. They're organizing some boycotts and are proposing perhaps a Meatless May campaign, or at least Meatless Mondays in May, to make people aware of what the workers have to go through. If you want to find out more information about the League of United Latin American Citizens, go to LULAC.org, LULAC.org.
And if you want to eat less meat in solidarity, go for it.
That's a good idea. Like I say, this is things that that happen on the West Coast and on the East Coast. All the news about New York and actually Washington State, it seemed like the COVID-19 was hot and heavy there for a long time, and we kind of got a little bit complacent. And now things are flaring up in Iowa. Like I told Donna before, it takes a while for things to get here in Iowa. I mean, remember go-go boots? It took a while. It started on the coast and it moved. Remember cappuccinos? That had to kind of come here in slow chunks too. But we are going to get ours, folks. So let's be careful. And remember, we're talking about workers here, essential workers. We're all essential. My goodness, of course we're all essential. And we all need to be safe with what we are doing. So we still need to feed people, and food banks have been trying to do a good thing with this, but food banks aren't perhaps as good as food stamps or the SNAP program.
Yeah, there was an article written by our own Iowa farmer, Matt Russell. It was in the New York Times, I think yesterday, where he talks about, he wrote it with two other people. I'm sorry, I don't have it pulled up in Kent. Give full credit, but we're very proud of Matt Russell for pointing this out. The food banks, the USDA, finally and perhaps belatedly has stepped up to purchase some of these overstock commodities, like vegetables, cheese, milk, you know, meat, and they want to bring huge amounts, much bigger amounts than normal, to food banks. Well, because of course people are hungry. Sounds like a good idea. However, as Matt points out in his New York Times article, food banks are not equipped to take this volume of perishable items. You know, they often don't have enough refrigeration. Also, he points out in certain cities, there are lines miles long of people waiting to go to food banks. So he suggested in this article that actually the food stamp or SNAP benefits should be enlarged to include the newly unemployed. And he points out that that's a system that works well, is easy to implement, that, you know, the format is well known. You could be having food stamps, then you could go to your local grocery store and spend it on the local economy. Plus, the good news about food stamps is it's something already written in the program. You have to... if you return to employment and you don't need it, you are automatically dropped from food stamps. So it's not like if you give food stamps to someone, they'll keep on getting it forever. No, you will only get them as long as you truly need it. So this sounds like an ideal way to supplement income from people who truly do not need to go hungry. That would just be unfortunate. So the USDA is making some efforts, but perhaps they are misguided. You can catch that if you Google the New York Times and type in Matt Russell, and it was yesterday's date. A very cogent article from a nice, practical Iowan.
Very good. So we're dealing with distribution of food again.
Yeah.
I ran across an interesting, I was reading a historian writing about
past epidemics and things. And it always comes down to how it changes society. This is a quote from that article. The Black Death brought an end to feudalism. Maybe we will see if COVID-19 will do the same for capitalism.
Or at least make some modifications, right?
Yeah.
A little more spread the wealth around, you know?
I think we may be up for some changes, so hang on to your hat.
Yeah. Get your pitchfork ready.
Right. I'm going to take a little opportunity here to say this is KHOI Community Radio, and you are listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen, tasty radio for the heart of Iowa.
Nature's waiting.
Hey, we are back. We are talking about essential workers and essential food.
Food is essential. Hello.
Distribution systems. But we still have to feed ourselves during this interesting time. And there is a person, you were talking about Chef Jose Andre, who is doing something very good to deal with the essential workers.
Yeah, he's a Washington, D.C. chef who has stepped up during some past national emergencies like hurricanes and floods and stuff like that, and developed ways to go in and feed large amounts of people quite well. And so now he's got a good public voice, and he's been talking lately about cooking at home, which is what we're all doing, right? So his suggestion, right, for cooking at home was a vegetable lasagna. Now, that's not my idea of something easy and fast to do, but you know, I mean, it looked good. That, to me, lasagna is a little bit of a it's a construction project, basically. But, you know, in the last 15 years for sure, we have had reached a point in our food consumption where literally 50% of food eaten was not coming from grocery store purchases. It was coming from fast food, takeout, and restaurants. So people had gotten quite used to not cooking at home. That's 50% of, you know, the American diet was not cooked at home. Well, boom, all of a sudden that has changed. You know, so everybody's cooking at home. So obviously, you know, more dishes to wash, more time spent cooking. So how are you dealing with it, Lana?
Well, both my husband and I like to cook, and although I don't like to cook all the time, which is nice to live with somebody who does. It is best to take turns because we have different methodologies. He measures things, I don't, and you know, you just don't want to. If I'm in the kitchen, I'm looking over his shoulder and say, "Are you sure you want to do that?" Or what? And then basically we say, "Just go away and come back for dinner," and it works out.
Yeah, well, you know, the main things, of course, people are still trying to eat healthy because with a virus going around, you want to keep your immune system up, right? However, it turns out from various of my food system newsletters, people are buying inordinate amounts of frozen pizza, ice cream, and booze, right?
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
well, yeah.
So there's this staples of comfort eating, emotional eating, as well. But, you know, obviously you're not going to do that every day. When we get sick of even that as a steady diet,
When you get sick of that, one thing I'm doing at my house, and we've been doing this for quite a while, we've become more aware of a healthy gut. And we're trying to keep up with our fermented foods, as in, always have kefir, kombucha, going in the refrigerator, and also
You can just eat yogurt. You
know. No, and yogurt or sauerkraut. We've got a pot of sauerkraut, and this is a live culture stuff. And I don't know, it seems to help, even if you do have ice cream and booze. It seems to level it off. So we've been kind of thinking about what's going on at people's houses, and we'd like to know. The Donna Lana Kitchen Radio Show would like to know. What's cooking at your house during this challenging time? We'd love to read your stories, thoughts, recipes on the air in the coming weeks. Donna and Lana are still on the air. Yes, we are here Tuesday at noon.
Mostly we're on the air.
Yeah. We try. Or you can find us anytime at khoifm.org at the website. So we'd like to know your comments, and you can send them to my email address, which is onioncreekfarm@gmail.com, Lana Noctingale and Joe Lynch, that's onioncreekfarm@gmail.com. So what's on your plate? Are you trying something new, or do you have a favorite takeout? Are you making favorite recipes? Are you making comfort food? Are you finding long-lost ingredients at the back of your kitchen cupboard or at the bottom of your freezer? Full recipes are not necessary, but most welcome. Let's use this opportunity to share our thoughts with one another. And we can use your name or not if you so choose. Just a little bit of your thoughts of what's on your plate. Send your emails to onioncreekfarm@gmail.com and mark it for the Donna Lana Kitchen or DLK. And we'll see what's going on in Central Iowa. We have creative, wonderful people out there.
Yeah, I would say for home cooking, you know, especially if you've got a big family and you've got three meals a day, this is, you know, it's my keep it simple, stupid, you know. This is not the time to try out the new gourmet recipe that's got, you know, 15 ingredients. And, you know, you just want things with vegetables. You know, I think we're eating more pasta than usual here because that's really fast. Also, you know, I want to say once again this thing about the tyranny of the recipe. You don't have to follow a recipe. For baking, maybe, but for everything else, you just kind of use what you have at hand. I would also caution you about recipes that you look up on the internet. Some are better than others. You know, these days anybody can write a recipe and post it. You know, it's not like the tried and true fancy cookbooks. So just have at it and keep it simple.
And also, this might be an opportunity to call your mom or your aunt or somebody you know, that, or a person next door. Ask for some advice. So
speaking of next door, we've been doing a bit with our neighbors. Somebody cooks, and then you call up the neighbor, and she says, hey, I made such and such tonight, and I'm leaving a pot of it on your front doorstep. You know, we're still sharing things around the neighborhood, which is always a lovely thing to do. You know, it's a way of communicating.
Yeah, sharing food.
I mean, you don't have to sit down at the same table, but you could be sharing the food.
Very good. And there are things, actually, spring is going to be springing. Asparagus is coming up. So,
I had asparagus last week. Oh, it was so good. So good. I got it from Lee's Greens. It was delivered to my back porch, as a matter of fact. And then tonight, taco night for Cinco de Mayo.
Okay, happy Cinco de Mayo. And yes, so tell me about taco night at Donna's house.
Okay, it's really simple. First of all, I have two vegans to deal with. So I really like taco night because you can make separate ingredients. So I get some whole wheat tortillas and I spread them out on the cookie sheet in the oven and they warm up. And then I cook some, well, not in this order. Sorry, guys, the tortillas come at the end. So I have cooked, we'll cook up some brown rice with maybe some onions and a little cumin in it. And then, you know, just whip out a can of refried beans and warm them up. You can always add onions and garlic to any of these things. So we ended up with refried beans, rice, open a jar of salsa. I take some ground beef and I just cook that up with garlic and cumin and oregano, you know, some some hot peppers maybe. Then I use some chopped lettuce. And then I also make a dish of what's in Mexico, or at least in the Baja, it's called crema, which is basically a little mayonnaise or sour cream and some lime juice, kind of, so it's runnier, you know?
Runny, okay.
Yeah, and then you need some fresh lime and then some grated cheese. So everybody kind of makes their own taco to suit themselves.
Great, good.
Yeah.
Oh, and speaking in the Cinco de Mayo theme here, I ran across a concept called pico de gallo. What's pico de gallo?
Oh, pico de gallo is a kind of a, pico de gallo means beak of the rooster.
Oh, that doesn't sound too good.
Well, it's like a salsa with a little pick, you know, a little more heat kind of.
Okay. Oh, good. So that's another thing that you could have.
Yeah.
I also have, want to take a shout out for having tacos or flatbread or tortillas. I like to keep a stash of those in the refrigerator, and I take them out. Actually, I warm them up one at a time.
Yeah, we do a lot of wraps, too.
Wraps.
Yeah.
Doing, having that in the ready to go, because anything can go inside, and this is the time of leftovers, folks. Leftovers are going to save us. I just know it. We can
meal you have to cook,
it's
right?
It's true. Always make a little extra. Then you've got lunch for a day or maybe lunch for 2 days. I sort of like wrapping things up and having my lunch yesterday's leftovers. I think
it's a different version of a sandwich, basically.
Yeah, I like it a lot. And I have a gas stove. I just warm up my tortillas on top of
on the flame. On the flame. I do that too when I'm doing one at a time.
Even if it gets a little, then that's kind of, you know,
the little charred effect.
Yeah,
it adds
right.
flavor.
That's all right. That's fine. So anyway, and you heard from Nick Odie?
Yeah, except that I can't remember what he told me, and now that we're using the phone for the microphone, I can't pull up his text.
We already asked our friend Nick Odie, and he sent us this great recipe, but it's stuck on. Well,
yeah, we're technically it's unavailable, so maybe next week.
So remember, we'd love to find out what's on your plate. So send recipes, or just send ideas, or even send thoughts about. We've got the recipe. Is it your mom's recipe for cornbread or something? And we can use your name or not if you so choose. And let's share about what we are cooking.
Yeah, we don't want to burn out on this. We need to keep encouraging ourselves. Keep on cooking. Yes.
Yeah, keep on cooking. And that means dishes, and that means dirty kitchens. But that means there's a number of people at home, I hope, that can help with chores.
It's all right. You won't get bored.
No, you get back to kind of the rhythm of things, and that's a good thing. That's good. Also, we've been doing meatloaf is something that I like to do. Meatloaf with a lot of either lentils or
oatmeal.
Oh, my,
or you know what? Mine is to take. I make my meatloaf with almost 1/3 carrots. I put the carrots. In the food processor, and I not slice them, but I grind them till there's kind of the consistency of ground beef, then you don't really notice them. I've fooled many children into eating carrots, putting them in the meatloaf like that.
Oh, that's great. I never thought of putting carrots in meatloaf. I usually put either, what my mom's go-to was using soda crackers. She crunched those up.
Mm-hmm.
Or oatmeal is good. Or
Binder, I use cornmeal.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
That's good. Anyway, that can stretch meat a long ways. And I like a combination. Well, we usually have venison in our freezer, and I like the combination. Venison is a very low-fat meat. So if I have some pork sausage or pork, I like to go half and half with that. And meatloaf is one of those things, too, that you cook it and you enjoy a good meal, and then it goes in those wraps the next day for a couple of days. It kind of stretches out, and I think it gets better as it sits. I don't know. I kind of like meatloaf that way.
That's a good idea, Lon.
Good. So, it's spring. There's beauty and miracles all around us. Flowers feed our soul, and it's amazing this time of year. Why do we forget that despite all the things that are wrong around us and going not so well, things are still blooming? Like I mentioned, my plum tree is blossoming and smelling absolutely wonderful. And Donna, your lilacs are out.
Well, we talk about growing vegetables a lot, but I want you guys to know that even though Lana grows a lot of garlic and onions and other vegetables and tomatoes, she also has an amazing flower garden.
And that's, and not because I'm trying to be fussy or, I just
we
like
love flowers.
We love flowers. And putting, you realize how adapted they are to so many different things. Some of them come early. Some of them come late. Some are actually just native and come up in the woods. Some spring things that are early and wild. And you look for them because, oh, that must be spring. Snowdrops. Spring beauties, rue anemone, trout lily, bluebells. Jack and the Pulpits are almost there.
The lily of the valley are just getting ready to bloom
see?
Now in my
see,
yard.
Yeah. The thing that once you get them established or once you've identified them along the wood edge there.
I got mine for free. My neighbor has a beautiful patch, and they just crept under the fence, and they keep coming, and they're fabulous. Thank you very much, Anderson.
Very good. But that's how I got my Lily of the Valley, too, because at some point, a gardener says, oh, they're just like weeds. Just take some. and I did. So now I've got it really nice. And then the woody things that are blooming, including the lilacs, there's plums, cherries, apples, crab apples, pears.
Magnolias,
serviceberry. And in Ames, Iowa, this must be the land of ornamental crabapple trees, because now there is every hue of pink that you could imagine, including a magenta pink that just does not look real. But there are trees.
Well,
in,
the red bud hasn't started yet.
Oh, the red buds, yeah.
Are they blooming? I haven't seen them yet.
Just barely.
Oh, okay. Talk about magenta. Oh, those will be gorgeous.
They will. Actually, did you know you can eat red bud leaves? They're not really fancy. But
the flowers?
The flowers. The flowers, not the leaves. You can eat the buds. And my friend Ben makes a red bud blossom cordial this time of year. I noticed he had
Is it pink?
Yeah, it's pink. I noticed he had a little jar brewing on his porch. It's kind of like fruit.
You have a red bud, don't you?
Yeah, I do. They must not be very long-lived. My tree's maybe 20, 25 years old, and it looks like it's kind of getting shaded out by some other stuff. So my red bud is kind of on its way out, but that's okay. So there's the woody things, and then there's the perennial things that either people have given me and said, here, take this, I've got too much, and I put it in. There's irises, Siberian iris, tulips, daffodils, all sorts of daylilies, crocus, Rudbeckia, which is black-eyed Susan,
mm-hmm.
purple coneflower, sweet
which
Lillian,
is echinacea.
Echinacea, Gallardia. Is Gallardia the same as blanket flower? I don't know.
That one I don't even know what it is, Lana. You're over my head.
I don't know. It's kind of this daisy-looking thing. I don't know. And there's also blanket flower. It is Gallardia. Huh? Look at that.
It's orange and yellow.
There it is.
Well, I'm not as good a gardener as Lana, so there are only a few things work for me. But we love the perennials because usually they come back.
They come back. And peonies, that works for a lot of years. Peonies take a while to mm-hmm. start. And primrose, which is another thing that can be, that's just a weed. No, it's not just a weed. Enjoy them out there. Enjoy. And actually, I planted things. I planted a yellow milkweed in my greenhouse, and I planted a flowering mullein called verbascum, and I will report on that
later. Now, if you plant that yellow milkweed, will it make pods and start to spread itself then?
I'm hoping so. It is the family, and it's actually Joe Pye weed is also in that same family.
Okay.
There it is. Huh?
Well, and, I'm starting the nasturtium seeds the borage seeds. All these make my favorite edible flowers.
Oh, edible flowers are wonderful. Get your nasturtiums and violets, and I mentioned red buds, and calendula, a yellow daisy looking like thing, calendula that comes up, that's edible too. And actually, there's a whole lot of different different varieties of those.
Of calendulas?
Of calendulas. And
oh, but you have to start those from seed.
Yeah, you have to start those from seed.
Can you direct sow them?
I never, because of how wild and woolly my garden is, I seldom do something. If I'm going to spend money on a packet of seeds, I tend to fuss with in the greenhouse, except for things like marigolds and sunflowers and things like
well,
that.
Well, now, yeah. Sunflowers, and you are much more experienced than I am, but they tend to come up, they bloom once and they're done. So do you do successive plantings of sunflowers?
I put sunflowers out in my field with my vegetables because they like sun, a lot of sun. And I plant a lot of different varieties.
Oh, there's so many beautiful
Yeah, so many different kinds. And actually, they self-seed. So if I happen to find one coming up among my beans or in between the onions, I decide to weed around it and I'll have a surprise. I like those. I like it. I wanted to mention calendula. There's a variety of calendula that I planted this year, and I'll see how that turns out. It's called Radio. Believe it. I had to plant calendula.
What color is it?
It's yellow, very, very yellow, with red stripes in it. And these little petals are very small and feathery and pokey. And, ooh, I like that. I always try to get some scarlet runner beans and morning glories to grow. See, flowers are amazing. Some of them have tough seeds like morning glories, and they take forever to come up, and others have teeny tiny little seeds, and you can scatter them, and they do just fine. Nicotina, for one thing, if that is a flowering tobacco, nicotina, and that's a good one to put in the back of your garden because it tends to be quite tall, and it blooms later in the day into the evening, and so it's quite pretty. That's got teeny tiny little seeds. You'd think that you're doing nothing but putting ground pepper on the ground, but there it is. And always be sure to read the seed packets, because some say scatter seeds on the ground and push in lightly. Others say put it in the depth of the seed, or let it sit there for 3 weeks because you're not going to see it for 3 weeks. Or some seeds, like morning glories, actually can stand to be nicked a little bit or rubbed with some sandpaper.
The coating.
Oh, they're so tough.
Do you soak them? Like, I soak my nasturtium seeds before I plant them. Does it help to soak the morning glory, too?
Yeah, it does.
Oh, all right.
Yeah,
I'll
do that. Anything that's, they look like little rocks is what they look like, and they look just, I'm trying, I haven't done it every year, but I'm doing some snapdragons this year.
Oh. And
I mean, they look like such an overly fussy English garden sort of thing, but I got a good place for that. I like to put a little snapdragon into things. That'll be good.
Well, and Lana and I have one favorite that she grows for me from seed because I'm hopeless with this, but it's the Mexican sunflower or the Tithonia. And they start slow, but by August and September, they're tall, sometimes 6 feet tall, with beautiful either orange, red, or yellow flowers. So for my birthday, Lana gave me a bunch of Tithonia plants, and I'm waiting till next week, but I'm ready to put them out.
Yeah, that's a very heat-loving sort of plant.
Oh, and the birds and the bees love the Tithonia. You will get sun hummingbirds and things like that coming for the Tithonia.
Now, it says sunflower, but it really is not a sunflower. The head is not big like a sunflower. It's
no, the head's like smaller. Maybe 2 inches or an inch and a half across. Beautiful colors.
Right. And one nice thing about flowers, they could be staggered. The perennial things are up now, and I know by the time the irises and the tulips and the daffodils start to die down, I can hope for and plan to have my daisies and galardia and other stuff coming up where that was. It's kind of, and I put it in between mint and other things that are out in the garden. I like to mix things up. I like to mix. And another thing I haven't planted for a long time, my mom always liked this plant. It's called a portulaca. It's moss rose.
A what?
Portulaca. Moss rose. It's a teeny tiny little plant. It's a ground hugger.
So it goes kind of in the front of the garden.
In the front. And it's a real heat-loving plant. Mom had... I grew up in Wisconsin, and the lot where our house was really sandy. I mean, compared to Iowa, it was not really good soil.
It's not a succulent, is it?
No.
Oh, there's the picture. Oh.
It's not a good, very good picture of the leaves, but the leaves are actually succulent-y looking. They're tiny little pokey leaves. So, of course, the leaves sort of look like rosemary. And then you get all these little tiny rose-looking flowers growing on it. Oh, so besides all the good flowers that were growing, I like to put things in between. And also, people like to say that there are beneficials, putting nasturtiums and marigolds in between some of your...
So yeah, I grow my flowers and my herbs together with the basils the flowers tucked in. And
good idea. And I'm trying this year. I read this, so I figured, well, it must be true if I read it someplace on a garden website, that mints deter cabbage moss. So I have a mint, apple mint section in my garden that's kind of going amok. And so instead of just tearing it out and kind of making it behave itself, I noticed the empty places, and I just put a bunch of cabbage and kale in between, and we'll see what happens out there. I mean, they can fight their way through it. That's just fine. Is your motherwort up?
My motherwort. Oh, that's my neighbor has the motherwort. I haven't looked. Oh. But my anacinth is coming up.
Oh, very good.
And I love it because, I mean, it is, I think technically an annual, but it drops seeds and then it pops up in different places all over the garden. And of course, the bees love the anacinth, and it's fun to cook with too.
Very good. And I'll end with another plant that is just really fun. It's called the toothache plant. And another one of these teeny tiny little seeds I planted in the greenhouse and transplanted, but you can plant it out in the garden too. Little teeny tiny seeds. Spilacis ecmella, a toothache plant. It's also called, the eyeball plant. The flower.
Oh, that's right.
It has no petals around it. It just has the centered bit of the flower, and it's bright red on top and yellow around the outside. It looks like little eyeballs looking at you out there. And one thing that's really interesting about it, it is an antibiotic, an antifungal, antiviral, and it numbs your mouth. You bite into it, and yes, your mouth goes numb. It's amazing. That's why they call it the toothache plant. It is native to South America. It's related to the asters. It's also called buzzer buttons or electric daisies. And it sprawls. It's a very low-growing plant. So another good plant to put along the front.
And is that an annual?
That's an annual. Mm. It will self-seed, but the plants are so teeny tiny that I kind of at least try to gather some seeds, just grab off some of those heads, and we'll dry the seeds that come off the heads and plant it so I know where I put it each year. So when you bite into the seeds or the leaves or any part of the plant, there's a cool sensation in your throat, and your tongue and your lips go numb.
When would it happen? How's the flavor? Could I make an ice cream out of that for a joke?
Oh, it'd be fun. It's sort of minty. It's not a bad flavor at all. It's fine.
Or cookies or
something. But be prepared. I've never tried to dry it, but some people like, you can dry it and then keep that as a dried herb for later in your life. Very good. I want to, I guess we're putting her out of time here. Here we go. Mother's Day is coming up next week, so here's a shout out to all those families at home, and also a shout out to babies that are born. So moms and babies are home this time of the year here, Mother's Day. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Today we talked about workers, essential workers, cooking at home, and flowers, and happy Cinco de Mayo. Down the Line Kitchen is live Tuesdays at noon, repeated at 7 at KHOIFM.org. Support this community radio station. My name is Lana Nakigal.
And I'm Donna Pukintas.
Thanks to Mike Murphy for excellent engineering. Eat good food and enjoy life.